This is the Australia Report with Vic Aladev. Good day, mate.
Vic Aladev, a very, very good morning to you. Hope you're well.
Good morning, Howard. I'm well, thank you. Good to talk to you.
Nice to chat to you. Let's talk about this extraordinary World Cup story.
It is an extraordinary World Cup story. What it's to do with is this tiny little Dutch island called Curaçao. And Curaçao is in the Caribbean. It's off the coast of Venezuela. A lot of people haven't even heard of Curaçao. And it's got a population of about 156,000. That is it. And Curaçao achieved one of the most sensational underdog stories in the history of sport when it qualified for the 2026 World Cup, the smallest nation ever to qualify for any World Cup soccer ever. And so what's that got to do with the Jewish community and why am I talking about it? So if we can go back to Kaunas, Lithuania in the 1940s. And obviously, as everybody well knows, the situation in Lithuania, 1940s, is getting very dire for the Jewish population of that area. And it's under Lithuania is under the control of the Soviet Union at that time. German army is making frightening progress across Europe. And Jewish communities which are in its path are obviously getting rounded up, inflicted all sorts of cruelty and being dispatched and deported to various camps. There's a one-man Japanese consul in Kaunas, Lithuania. That consul, his name is Chiuna Sugihara, and he runs a one-man consulate, mm-hmm. supported by his wife, her name is Yukika, and a handful of clerical staff. And he wakes up early one morning because he hears a strange noise outside the building, even before he's opened his office. And he looks outside to see thousands of people lining up quietly, peacefully outside his building in their coats, in their hats, and their suitcases. And what are they doing there? They are Russian Jews. They have come to apply for visas, Japanese visas, to flee the Soviet Union. Sugihara sends a message to his superiors back in Tokyo and Japanese Foreign Ministry, requesting authorization to give these visas. The response comes back very quickly, no, you cannot, unless these people fulfill certain particular requirements, which the majority of them definitely do not. Sugihara sends a second message because the crowds are growing over the days. The response comes back again. Same response, definitely not. He sends a third message requesting permission to give visas. And the response comes back again, no, and close the consulate and come home in disgrace. So Sugihara has a dilemma on his hands. Is he going to follow his orders or is he going to follow his conscience? And he wrestles with this for a little while, and over the next 6 weeks before he closes the consulate, he sits at his desk for up to 18 hours a day by hand, writing out visa after visa after visa. And he writes out approximately 6,000 visas to enable Jews to leave the area. Now, what has Curaçao got to do with this all? They put Curaçao on the visas as their destination. Now, most of them have absolutely no intention of going to Curaçao. They're not going to Curaçao. But word has come back that you can get into Curaçao without a visa. So they need a visa to get out of the Soviet Union, but they can get into Curaçao, supposedly. They have no intention of going there. And the rationale for specifying Curaçao is that another consulate, a Dutch consul named Jan Swartendijk, has made it known that you can actually get into Curaçao without visas. And so it's a legitimate gateway, albeit it's not entirely fictional, but it's a legitimate pathway where people can get out of the Soviet Union to notionally head towards this place called Curaçao. And so, as I say, Sugihara seizes on this bureaucratic loophole, writes out 6,000 visas over the next 6 weeks, and even reportedly is scribbling out visas as this train is leaving the station and throwing them out to it's chilling. You get
incredible
it's mind boggling. as the people are standing there desperate to get these life-saving pieces of paper. And they, the refugees, the 6,000, they undertake this daunting journey across on the Trans-Siberian Railway. Most of them end up in Shanghai, which is under Japanese control. Most of them never get to Curacao. Most of them settle in Shanghai. A handful go on to the United States. A handful go on to British-mandated Palestine, as Israel was at the time. And a tiny number actually do get to Curacao, which has a minuscule Jewish community. It is estimated that today there are 40,000 people alive today who are the descendants of the recipients of these Sugihara visas. And why am I talking about it? Because hundreds of them live here in Australia. Hundreds. Because many Jews came to Australia via Shanghai, and therefore the beneficiaries of these Sugihara visas. And so when I heard that, and I must confess, I do follow the World Cup, and when I heard that Curacao had qualified for the World Cup, I thought, what a beautiful story to get out the fact that ordinary people can make a difference. And so I wrote an opinion piece, which was published just a couple of days ago in The Australian, which is our national, one of our major national newspapers, telling the story, which I've just recounted. And so it has been published in the national media. It has been picked up amazingly because people have responded so positively to the fact that here are two ordinary men, Sugihara and the Dutch guy Swartendijk, both of whom refused to look away, both of whom said, we are going to do the right thing. So just using this angle of Curacao qualifying as a wonderful opportunity to put this incredible message out there. And both Sugihara and Swartendijk, by the way, were declared righteous among the nations by Yad Vashem.
So interesting. I've just received a text from Rabbi Yossi Goldman, and he says, hi, Howard. My father got a Sugihara visa. I mean, she'll right now can't check, but his father got a Sugihara visa. Isn't that incredible? So here, if you look at exactly what you're saying, is if you look at Rabbi Goldman, who is very, very well known here in South Africa, and whose children have continued to make a significant difference to the Jewish world, it's quite unbelievable. Here is exactly a tangible example of that.
And that gives me the shivers right now as you say that. I mean, what a beautiful moment. The fact that there he is, you know, thousands of miles away, and yet he is alive and his children are alive and doing whatever they're doing to make it a better world because of the amazing courage 80 years ago. By the Japanese consul Sugihara and by Swartendijk. It's a beautiful story.
That is really, really incredible. But just quickly, we've got 2 minutes left. The third person apparently arrested in connection with the destruction of the Adas Israel synagogue.
So very quickly. So viewers, listeners will be remember. So December 2024, so 18 months ago now, the Adas Israel synagogue in Melbourne, Orthodox synagogue, was not only set on fire but destroyed, and two people have been arrested who were directly involved, and another one who driving a getaway car, and now just days ago another person has been arrested. So the good news in quotes is that the case is ongoing. The police are continuing to do what they need to do. So three people have now been charged with the arson of the synagogue, and a fourth with driving a getaway car.
That is where we leave it. Vic Aladev, thank you as always. Hope you have a fantastic rest of the day and week, and we'll chat to you next week, Tuesday, at the same time.